Hello and welcome to Film School for Dad, the podcast where I attempt to catch my dad up on a lifetime of squandered interests and misappropriated activities that somehow managed to overlook almost all of popular culture. I'm Harvey.
And I'm Dad.
And each week, we watch a movie that Dad hasn't seen, which is pretty much all of them, and a film that he probably should have seen, and then we get his opinion on whether it deserves its place in cinematic history. So what film are we discussing today, Dad?
I believe we're watching Back to the Future.
That's correct. Let's play the music. Dun, 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 dun. So, Back to the Future. Can we start with whether or not you have even heard of this film?
I've heard of it.
Okay, what have you heard?
I've even used the phrase Back to the Future when I'm writing.
Okay, referencing the movie directly?
No, not referencing the movie.
Where does the phrase come from?
Well, the phrase is a term that means what it says and is handy sometimes to use if you want to characterize something as in that way.
So what does it mean though? Like if you say Back to the Future, what do you interpret? I mean, it's obviously a contradiction.
I've used it where in situations where the term deja vu might have been used in the past. I think I used it even in relation to council elections.
All right.
Where I was trying to say that someone was doing things the same way as they'd done years ago.
Okay. Isn't that back to the past rather than back to the future though?
No, but it's not going back. It's going forward.
Yeah.
Proposing to do that going forward.
Yeah. I didn't even know it was an expression. Like I know it from the movie. It was made in 1985, right? So I was 10 when it came out. Mm-hmm. So there's probably not much of a time where I can remember that movie didn't exist, so I wouldn't know.
No.
It's so ingrained in popular culture now.
Of course, the big thing that happened in 1985 was the year after 1984.
Right.
And the book by George Orwell that we'd all studied 30 years earlier.
Yes.
Its actual year had just occurred.
And it had not come to pass.
Not exactly.
But if you actually measure
some elements of it,
if you measure current times by the book 1984, much more of it has come to pass in quite terrifying ways.
Yes, he was pretty spot on in some ways.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, he knew. Yeah, that people say that it was like conspiracy theorists say that 1984 was actually a roadmap and not a fictional book. That he wrote it for the elites who are doing these things as a plan for how to. I don't know, take over the world, you know, that kind of stuff. But not the topic of this podcast.
Okay. If Back to the Future came out in 1985, it was a year I was extraordinarily busy doing a fairly high-profile job. Generally speaking, I doubt if I saw any movies there for a few years.
All right. Well, then I guess we can forgive you for missing it. But there were sequels as well in 1989 and 1990, I think so.
I've noticed that.
Yeah.
I think I might have seen a scene or two on TV or something like that.
Oh, it'd be hard to avoid, I tell you.
Yeah.
I'll do this intro that I partially wrote. It'll just peter out because I haven't had time to write the whole thing, but I'll read it and then we'll just see how it goes. Released in 1985, the year in which the film actually takes place, until the time travel happens, in which case, obviously, they don't stay in that time period. The series skyrocketed Michael J. Fox's career, taking him from successful TV star. You might remember him in Family Ties. Do you remember that show?
I remember it.
Yeah. Remember that kid that I wanted to be in Family Ties?
I don't remember watching it myself, but I remember the show.
It was like my favorite show.
Yeah. I certainly remember Michael J. Fox on TV. He was, what was the character in?
Alex P. Keaton.
Okay.
Or Keating. Yeah. Keaton or right. Keaton? Keating. I can't remember which.
But didn't he play another character on TV as well?
No, that was, he may have, but that was his big sort of tentpole role in Family Ties. He was like the
I didn't watch American sitcoms either. So
No. Family Ties was pretty good, but I wanted to be Alex P. Keaton at the time, which is kind of weird now because I look back and he's a kind of like a capitalist, selfish kind of not particularly likable character, but he had a certain charisma that got away with all that stuff.
If I'd known that, I would have had a stern word to you at the time.
Yeah, you probably would have. It was, I guess it's because it's the 80s. It's like, you know, the Wall Street era. You remember the movie Wall Street? Or Greed is Good and all of that stuff.
It was only 2 years before the stock markets actually did crash and all the financial institutions of Australia started failing, particularly in Victoria. So
That's right.
So it was a pretty it was right at the period when the excesses were at their worst. Yeah.
Well, you will see a reflection of that in this movie, I believe. So that was one of the reasons it was notable. It took Michael J. Fox's career from TV star into movies, and then it spawned. So it was very successful, the first film.
Right, and Spielberg had something to do with it, didn't he?
Well, Spielberg was a producer, he was executive producer.
How long had he been going in that by then?
Well, Jaws was a 70s movie. He would have been 10 years in the game by then. Right. So yeah, he was throwing money
established
around.
Established big-time producer.
That's right. So it's directed by Robert Zemeckis. You may not have heard of him.
No.
He's not the type of director that does a lot of interviews and is in the public eye like Spielberg.
No.
However, he's done a lot of your favorite movies, potentially. Robert Zemeckis did Forrest Gump, Castaway, you might have seen.
No.
Both Tom Hanks.
No.
Have you seen Forrest Gump?
No.
Well, that's one we should probably watch. I don't want to do too much Zemeckis, though. He does make a lot of very notable films for some reason. He's got a very good eye and good taste in general. And he does a lot of different genres. He does thrillers. He does. Mm. Have you seen Death Becomes Her?
I don't believe I've seen it.
It's his best one. It's so good. But so is Back to the Future. And that's one of the things that I really miss is the tone of these films that Robert Zemeckis was making back in those days, where they were just, I think the word is zany.
Right.
So it was more of a sort of madcap feel. And you'll notice in movies these days, you don't get it anymore. There's either comedy and they're very realistic and gritty and people shitting their pants. And, you know, it's very grounded, though, in the characters being realistic. What Robert Zemeckis was doing back then was, I don't know, just these zany, larger-than-life exaggerated characters. But he could make it work. It sounds like it wouldn't be good, but it can be. It's like, Peter Sellers-type stuff, I reckon.
Okay. I certainly was a big fan of Peter Sellers.
Yeah, you liked his character work?
Absolutely.
That's you see a lot of that in Back to the Future and Death Becomes Her. Mm. But then Robert Zemeckis eventually got caught up in making things ultra-realistic. Mm. And they're still good movies, but just not – there's just no one doing the zany stuff anymore. I wrote a whole article about it a couple of years ago about how I just missed that zany feel that was in Back to the Future.
Well, The Party is one of my favorite movies.
Yes, I know. There's a toilet scene in that, isn't there?
There is.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe we should watch Meet the Parents sometime. That's got the modern equivalent of that toilet scene, I think. All right. Well, we'll stay on topic anyway. The other notable thing about Back to the Future was that it had the two. So it was so successful at the box office that the two sequels, when they eventually got around to doing them, they shot them both at the same time. And I'm pretty certain, although I haven't been able to verify it, that's the first time that was ever done. But if you look at Lord of the Rings and a lot of modern trilogies, they're all shot together now. So, you know, to get the efficiencies of making three films at once. You've got a set that appears in all three films. You can film all the scenes from that set together. So the two sequels were done that way. And that happened with movies like The Matrix, Lord of the Rings, quite a few modern.
Weren't the sequels sometime later?
Yeah, so they were like 4 years later, but they were always going to happen. I think it might have just taken them a lot of time to work out how to do it.
It was always planned to be a trilogy, was it?
No. So that's actually a common misconception, because in the DVD releases and stuff, if you watch the first film and maybe the copy that we're going to watch, it says to be continued at the end.
Right.
But the original film release didn't have that. They added it later for whatever releases. People still to this day argue over whether they saw that or not. It's one of those things, you know, the Mandela effect. Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
Where people say we've slipped into an alternate reality and tiny little things for some reason in movies and brands and things like that have just changed because of what they're doing with the, you know, the Hadron Collider thing. So, but it did, it's had a cult following. It's been 30 years now. They had a big anniversary a couple of years ago. You know, the stars of the film came out on stage. There were thousands of people cheering. And I think it was at one of those Comic-Con events or something like that. You know, they had events on all the late night shows and they came on all the shows. They re-released all the DVDs. So it's kind of a big deal is what I'm trying to say.
I'm pretty sure Mum took you to see it when it came out. Did she?
It's possible. I don't recall how I saw it the first time.
Okay. Well, you would have only been 10 or 11 or something.
Yeah, that's right. I was 10. So, but it was a phenomenon. I mean, E.T. was definitely like that. I remember lining up around the block for E.T. and that was similar timing. So
no, I saw that.
I'm glad you saw E.T. It's a good one.
I probably saw it with you.
That's the good alien film, the only film ever made that I'm aware of where the aliens are good. Everything else is they just try and kill us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say. I just want to get into it, I guess. I think it's I'm just not sure how you're going to take it, to be honest.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, it's a little bit on the Jurassic Park tip where I'm like, I don't know if this will work in context.
I have absolutely no expectations, so we'll
see. Yeah, could be a cartoon for all you know.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's not with Michael J. Fox in it.
Yeah. Well, he could have just done the voice.
Yeah, you don't know. Although he's a bit cartoon-like himself at times.
Well, there's another movie that you like, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, right? You showed me that one when I was younger.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Christopher Lloyd, who was, I think, he's definitely in it. I can't remember the character that he played, Christopher Lloyd.
Right, okay.
He's one of the main characters in this as well.
Yeah. I mean, I was a fan of Jack Nicholson. I always thought his stuff was fantastic.
Well, he's not in this one.
No, not
we'll
in
do
this
a Jack
one,
Nicholson,
but he was
though.
In One Flew Over the
Cuckoo's Nest. Yeah, that's one right. He was the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if you'll recognize him. He does a very, he's got a lot of makeup and hair and stuff. Right. He looks quite different, but you'll probably recognize him. He was quite young in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, though, right? Like maybe 20s, mid-20s at most.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's just crack on and watch it, I reckon.
Let's go for it.
We're back. We watched the movie. I've achieved a lifelong dream of watching Back to the Future with my father. And now we'll go into the phase of disappointment where you tell me what you thought of it.
Well, what the f*** was it all about?
I don't know. What do you think it was about?
Well, it was a big piece of nonsense.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just thought, you know, good on them for making it, but what's the point?
What's the point? Well, I think there's a point. I think there's lots of points. I think you and I differ on what a movie's point should be, though. So, or what a movie's potential to have a point can be. I understand a movie that has a serious point and a
the sort I like.
The sort that you like. Back to the Future was never going to do that, though. I mean, you must have known that from the first frame almost, that it was relatively light entertainment.
The first 10 minutes, I just thought I was watching the latest American sitcom.
Yeah, it's got that sort of vibe, which I think is why they wanted Michael J. Fox in there.
More than the vibe, it's got the look and the feel of just a trite American sitcom.
True. It's a little bit better lit in parts.
Yeah.
There's a little bit more creative lighting, but some of the indoor scenes and stuff look just like a sitcom. They're very flat, which was, if you remember back to the 70s, all movies looked like that. There was no real creative lighting, except maybe in like Italian horror movies and stuff. They were quite experimental, but movies used to look a lot flatter. Mm. It probably was quite inventive
It moved out of that realm when we saw the Libyan terrorists for the first time. That's when I realized I was watching something really weird.
Yeah. Well, do you think it's weird? It's absolutely weird. Obviously, it's got a conceit at the center of it, which is time travel. Surely
there's a better way they could have done that bit of the plot. And, you know,
So remember when we watched Memento, right? We were saying that the exercise of writing that film would have been very, very difficult from the perspective of getting all the pieces to fit into place. If you remove any of the pieces of Back to Future, I would put it to you that none of it works without every single element that's in there.
Oh, they all connect it up, but there'd be other ways you could have written the Maybe. Plot other than have this sort of Keystone Cop Libyan terrorists.
Well, okay, but here's your writing challenge, Dad. You've got to have the doc die.
I mean, I've never seen so many bullets fired without hitting anything.
No, that's true, but the bullets did hit Doc, right? So you've got to have that moment where he dies so that you can have Marty's conflict later, right?
I get the fact he needed to die, but he could have died in all sorts of ways.
Okay, give me an example of what's better than having him steal plutonium to power the time machine, which is all tied together. He has to steal it from some Libyan terrorists. He's a scientist, so they got him to build the bomb. It's all the elements fit, right? So there's quite a lot of involved stuff that leads to that kind of slightly hammy aspect of the plot. If you remove it, it doesn't work, right? Doc doesn't die. There's no dramatic conflict at the end with Marty trying to warn him. He would just get home. It'd be quite boring, right? I mean, it might still be exciting because you don't know if the lightning's going to time up or whatever, but it's not the same.
But the biggest problem is I can't understand how things can happen twice or three times.
In what sense?
Well, you can't have a bit of your life where there was this strange person in it one time and the other time without it. What's going on there?
In what sense you mean?
Well, if you transport someone back to the past,
yeah,
they're a new person in those people's lives. The logic of it just defeats me.
So here's the thing, right? So people talk about Back to the Future and they say, okay, well, time travel can't work that way. Okay. Good. But the movie establishes that it does, right? It doesn't matter whether it can. There is no time travel. Time travel isn't possible. Screw Einstein. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Time travel is not possible, right? So, well, it's certainly not now, but it probably isn't ever. If it was possible, how would it work? There is no way for it to work. Is there?
No.
So then
no.
That's, what's the movie going to do?
That's my point.
It's a time travel movie.
So why make it?
So there's three models of time travel, I think, three main models that fiction chooses. One is the Back to the Future model, and it's sometimes referred to as the Back to the Future model because of how well it was done, where you can go back in time and change your own past, right? Now, it explains in the sequels a little bit more about how that works and things, but I agree, it's not very well explained practically how that works.
It's not explained in practical terms at all, but I mean, I accept it's an interesting concept and it creates an interesting
dramatic situation.
I was going to say story, but it's not the story. It's the dramatic. Yeah, exactly. It creates a situation which is intriguing, except that your rational thoughts are saying, yeah, except this is just fantasy.
All right. Well, tell me if you like the other two, right? There's two other ways. Like this. Two other ways I've seen it portrayed. The other one is no matter what you do, you already did it, so you go back in time. You might think you're changing things, but then if you get back to the future and you look back on what happened, it's all the same, and you were there. And for some reason, whatever it may be, you don't remember it, or you know, you've got to make an excuse why you don't remember the effect that you had on the past, but you can't change it, right? So it's an unchangeable past. That's been done well in a couple of movies. But it's a lot harder to do because you've got to have things happen before someone time travels where they're actually interacting with themselves.
In other words,
somehow.
You just become a spectator.
It's really hard to avoid just that person becoming a spectator. You need to either not tell the audience that that's the model of time travel that you're using before you go back and then have them discover later, oh, that's disappointing. The hero couldn't change anything, which is always a bit of a downer, right? So it's hard to do. And the other model of time travel I've seen was in a TV show called Lost, where you can change things, but the universe course corrects to get back to the point where the thing that you're trying to change still happens. So weird things will start happening in the universe, like the laws of physics will start bending to correct what you changed in the timeline, right? So they're the three things you can do. I like the Back to the Future model.
Well, that's fascinating. That means there's been a lot of movies made about time travel.
There's a lot. Yeah, it's a whole genre, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how many have you seen that have involved time travel?
None, I don't think.
You must have seen The Time Machine, though.
I was going to say there's an H.G. Wells.
Yeah. He did a time. It's called The Time Machine.
I've certainly read the book.
And it's like a big bike-like thing that he sits in, and then he goes back to dinosaur times and stuff. I've watched it. I don't know if I've seen it with you, but
I can't remember seeing it as a movie. But I'm pretty sure I've read a book about it.
Well, yeah, it would have been a book first. Mm. Yeah. So I can't remember what time travel model that was either. He was kind of a spectator, I think. Didn't he just sort of went back and... No, he did.
I find it bizarre we're talking about models of time travel.
What else are you going to talk about after you watch Back to the Future?
Why make any of them? That's what I'm saying.
Well, Einstein posited that time travel is possible, right?
No, but just take Back to the Future. It's a sort of kitschy way of making a movie, as I say, that looks like an American sitcom or something.
Yeah.
So it's hard to actually take, if it's trying to make some point out of the time travel, it's hard to take it seriously.
Well, it makes a point about his parents and how they present themselves to him when he's young.
Yeah.
As opposed to how they really were, you know, the sort of hypocrisy of becoming a parent and then having to moralize to your kid after you probably didn't follow those morals yourself.
I know you did. But it's not like they were believable people. They were cartoon people.
Yeah, yeah. So that's for me, it's the interesting thing. And the thing that I miss about movies is this idea that you can have characters who are just sort of very likable, cardboard cutout. Yeah. You know, there's emotion there very rarely. But if you notice, the movie moves on really fast from the emotional moments. It gives you that moment and then, boom, just some music kicks in and something else happens and we're just moving on. We don't want to linger.
Generally, a lot of noise.
Yeah, there's
very
a lot of
noisy
noise.
Movie.
Yeah. So it's supposed to be exciting. It's supposed to be fun. You know, it's escapism for most people, you know, when they watch a movie.
Well, I didn't get any excitement out of it. I got a few laughs out of it.
I did. I got so much adrenaline out of it, even just watching it now.
Are you serious?
I absolutely love every frame of that movie. And
I can see it's, you know, cleverly made. That's.
Oh, I'm glad you can see that.
No, I can see that. That's what I'm saying. I can see the actual production of it is well done. But the whole concept is just pointless.
Well, if you're not willing to accept the concept, then I suppose it was, you know, the movie, it was not not going to succeed from the start. Yeah. I don't know if I...
Didn't know the concept I was going to be asked to accept at the start.
Well, I said in my intro, Back to the Future, time travel.
Yeah, but Back to the Future took on a different meaning to what I'd always given it once I'd seen it.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because because
it was saying he needed to get back to the future. That's where the title comes from.
Yeah.
Rather than the meaning that I mentioned before.
Exactly. Yeah. It was. That's why I was confused by that. I hadn't known that meaning.
That's
before.
How I'd taken the term to mean, and I'm sure others have, and that's how I've heard it used and have used it myself.
Yeah. Mm. Well, they say the term Back to the Future twice in the movie right at the end.
Yeah.
You've got to come back to the future with me and we've got to get you back to the future. So it's...
That's like they were setting up a sequel.
Well, they did, but they didn't mean to.
No.
So the whole... whole...
So what happened at the finish then? Where were they? What year were they in at the finish?
So he gets back to the same year, right? But because
everything's different.
Yeah, because he's given his dad... So the confidence to defeat Biff by that stage, then his entire future has changed.
So it's saying that he's changed the future.
Yes, absolutely. Right. So no matter what you do in the past, you're changing the future, right?
If you can just get back there and have another crack at it, you can change the future.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that's an interesting concept. But some things are exactly the same, like him.
Mm.
He's the same.
Mm.
He hasn't changed.
No, well, he was the time traveler, though. The time traveler can't change.
No, but, you know, they change so much they might not have had children. I mean, if you change people so fundamentally, you change everything. So
that's called the butterfly effect, and you're right. It would change a lot more, most likely.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is a movie.
So how come he came out just this? Well, that's really the only answer to what I'm saying. It exactly. is a movie. Yeah.
But
yeah.
what's wrong with a movie just being fun?
Nothing.
That movie wasn't just fun. Like, you watch Jurassic Park and you go, I feel like you were trying to make a point, but you were kind of silly, right? You don't look at Back to the Future and go, you were trying to be serious. You go, yeah, you were trying to be fun from the start. You were showing like a whole bunch of gadgets. I mean, that opening shot, if you watch it again now, you watch it for the second time, right? That opening shot is one of the most information dense pieces of exposition. Yeah. It tells you everything about a character you haven't seen, right? You know the doc before you even see him.
Yeah.
It tells you about the fact that the doc's been missing. It tells you so much stuff right at the start of the movie. I mean, it's just good filmmaking. That's what the joy that I get out of it now when I watch it. You can watch the background of that movie.
Well, I got quite a few laughs out of it.
But, yeah, it's got some funny
There's
funny
a big
gags.
Difference between you and me. I actually was alive in 1955 through to 1985. You weren't.
No, so, that's true.
So I'm actually watching things like Davy Crockett hats on the kid's head at the, at the kitchen table in 1955 and thinking I had one of them when I was that age.
I know. And I'm looking at the flux capacitor going, I want a flux capacitor. And I've wanted it since I ever saw that movie. I've still not got it. Why is that? I can afford to just go out and buy one. I haven't got one yet.
Exactly.
God damn it. I'll work on that. You don't want to tick off the bucket list too quickly, right?
No. Well, there's plenty of time to develop it. But anyway, it's a piece of nonsense. Yeah, it's a piece of nonsense. And that was my overall reaction, a very well-made piece of nonsense.
So you got a little bit of enjoyment out of it. I mean, a couple of laughs here and there.
I got some laughs, yeah.
And it's...
I got some laughs. Once I was able to relax and laugh, I didn't want to, you know, laugh at it. I wanted to laugh.
You could laugh at it, I guess.
I wanted to laugh because of it, not at it. Yeah.
Well, the very good, the best of the structured gags, I think you did have a giggle.
Yeah.
From my observation. I don't think there was anything that you were laughing at that I noticed where you shouldn't have been anyway.
Oh, good.
They're deliberate jokes.
I'm pleased. I could have watched it in the theater and not been embarrassing then.
Yeah. And I think your observation about it being like a sitcom is spot on and probably deliberate in a sense. In a way, it's
Well, the people are comic strip characters, really.
Yeah, but I think at the same time, there's a sort of a self-reflective, satirical sort of aspect to it, like the consumerism. All he wants is a 4x4, and that's the goal of the movie. Kind of, you know, that's his MacGuffin. I think it, and I've seen interviews with the makers, so I know they meant it. Yeah. But it, you know, they spent a really, really long time working out that script, trying to sort of fashion in a little bit of commentary on the times that they lived in as well. And you mentioned
where were the cops? Well, they're belting around.
They didn't have cops back then.
Beating up the whole neighborhood.
And yeah, that's right.
No one appears. It's like they got the whole place to themselves.
Well, it wouldn't have
Libyan
made...
terrorists firing machine guns.
Well, almost a rocket launcher.
Yeah, almost a rocket launcher.
They had one. Yeah,
and not a cop in sight. Not a. You know, not a another person inside. I found all that pretty silly.
But you said, I think on the other side when we were recording, or maybe before we turned on the microphones, you said 1985 was around the year when capitalism peaked, consumerism peaked, and then there was a crash later. So in a lot of ways, that movie was critiquing something that was a real problem at the time.
It was in the days before terrorism as we know it now. So it actually wouldn't be politically correct to do much of that movie now.
No.
All the bullying stuff would not be acceptable.
Well, it would be acceptable, but it would need to be paid off differently. And
it'd have to be solved differently. You can't solve violence with violence.
Of course you can. You always punch the bully in the face. Everyone knows
that. That's what always used to happen.
Yeah. People still know that.
Particularly in the movies, but a lot of that stuff would be out of bounds these days to make it.
I think the thing I noticed actually this time round, there's quite an aggressive way women are treated in this movie.
Extremely. Yeah,
and it is a bit, you kind of, I wouldn't have when I was a kid, obviously, when I first saw it, but in this time around, I'm like, geez, that's pretty
the way they're being treated and the way they're responding as if they that's their lot.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah, she really, especially his mother when she's younger. Yeah, she's just sort of takes it on the chin. Oh, a bit of parking rape, no problem.
Yeah,
this will be over soon. Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
yeah, it's interesting actually how perspective changes, because I would have said the Me Too movement or whatever wouldn't really have affected me, but I do notice it now. So it's raising awareness. I guess that's a good thing.
You could have made that movie with all the concepts about Back to the Future without the storyline, including all of that stuff. It didn't have to be that storyline.
Yeah. Time travel movies have proven you can have quite a lot of varied storylines based around time travel. You can do very serious things. You can do very funny things.
A remake would be a good idea.
A remake? Oh, don't tell them to reboot it.
With a different storyline that's more acceptable to modern standards. Yeah,
well, absolutely. Luckily, I believe Robert Zemeckis still owns the rights to it.
Oh, right.
And he has said, over my dead body, will there ever be a sequel? I'm sure he feels the same way about a remake.
I didn't mean I said a remake.
No, but people are screaming out for a part four, because it'd be easy to continue the story after the trilogy.
I haven't seen part two and three, of course. But
it's time travel. You can fix anything, right? So,
yeah.
But I think, I think he's right. They're asking for something that wouldn't be good. It'd just be disappointing. There's no way to make it that would live up to people's memory of that movie.
Hmm.
But yeah, it sounds like it doesn't stand up too well in modern times. And it's not just the political correctness aspect, is it? I mean, you must have noticed the effects were a little bit cheesy, obviously. The bit where he holds his hand up and he's disappearing. I used to think that was a masterful special effect, but now I look at it and go, oh my God.
Yeah, no.
Turn it off.
No, it's pretty clunky in some ways,
but
nevertheless, it's still pretty well made.
Well, you've got to remember there was no computer effects in that movie. So
and you know, it didn't worry me from that point of view. I thought it was just quite well made.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, there aren't that many effects, are there? There's a few lightning effects.
More the storyline and the idea of having sort of these cardboard cutout type characters.
But the thing that's actually what I like about it, because it's got a blockbuster feel, right? Even if you didn't enjoy it, it's still got a roller coaster ride sort of feel to it, right? Where it's sort of very light and fun and, you know, whatever, but it's not based around punching each other.
I can see it's a family movie in that sense.
In some ways, it's quite dark too, though, right?
Oh, yeah, but that's not unusual for there's plenty of children's movies that have got a double meaning.
Yeah.
What I mean is people of all ages could watch that.
But I respect it because it derives its excitement more from story than it does from action. Like everything now is just kung fu fighting or people shooting each other. It's like an action scene now, it's automatically fighting and conflict. Yeah. Whereas in this, it's just plugging in cables and logistical issues with trying to get a simple thing to happen and getting the timing right.
Yeah.
And I think it, maybe not for you so much, but for me, it builds up the excitement quite well. You know, all the elements. It's very
all the elements.
Yeah, all the elements. Why not?
That he's trying to plug in. That's right.
Yeah, well, that's right. The literal elements. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, the visual elements that it feeds you in order to create a sense of tension.
Yeah,
around
that's true. But I mean, when you've come to the conclusion, as I had early in the movie, that the whole thing's a piece of nonsense.
Yeah.
It's tension's not going to enter into
the. Well, you just got to turn the brain off a bit, Dad. It's not that hard.
Tension is not going to enter into the equation. It's just happening, and like all these things, I know perfectly well how it'll turn out.
Well, yeah. I mean, you pretty much know he has to get back to.
I knew he'd get
present.
Back.
Yeah.
I didn't know he'd get back to some utopia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there was a bit of a twist ending then, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't pick that. But
I never even thought about that as a twist. I guess it is, though, isn't it?
I found it a twist, absolutely.
But they do show a lot of things that make sense to lead to that.
That was the most gripping part of the entire movie for me.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's interesting.
What it was like when he got back, because it hadn't occurred to me he'd be doing anything but coming back to exactly the same situation that he'd left.
Hmm. Okay. I don't remember if I was surprised when I first saw it or not. In fact, watching it now, it's really weird.
His new wealthy yuppie parents are a bigger cartoon cutout than his original ones.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. His dad's like all suave. And,
to the point of ridiculousness.
It is. I don't know. I mean, if you try and imagine that movie doing the same thing with more serious, in-depth characters, I think you would end up with probably a 4-hour movie. You couldn't fit all that story in and the character and everything else as well. So I think.
Is that sort of explaining why you think it's done that way or.
Maybe. I can tell you. Okay, so here's a bit of history.
So they're trying to keep the real emotion out of it so that you don't get too.
Yeah, it's just fun. It's involved just a popcorn
with the characters.
Movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're supposed to be sad that Doc dies and shocked the first time, probably.
No.
And you're supposed to be sad that Marty's apparently failed to warn him in time. You're supposed to feel something there.
Well, I didn't.
Well, you're supposed to, I think. I mean, but not dwell on it and not to take away from the movie. You're not supposed to end up crying and being upset, you know. I mean, it's supposed to just be a dramatic moment where you think, "Oh, he didn't save him," and then, "Oh, he has saved him." That's all.
I had an overwhelming urge to laugh when the terrorist shot him.
Really? Yeah. You're cold, man. Well, you're cold.
They were so ridiculous.
Yeah, they were, but not in the second time. And, they don't look ridiculous the second time.
And I'm sure Libyan people would be very upset to be portrayed as such bungling fools.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. You remember Wasim, my friend Wasim, my childhood friend.
Mm.
He used to talk about the Libyan terrorists all the time. Every time he'd see one of those vans, he'd be like, "Oh no, it's the Libyan terrorists."
So he was referring to that.
Yeah, he was always referring to that movie. Yeah, and there's that thing that movie has got so many places in popular culture because it's ingrained in people of my age's head.
Yeah.
Like for instance, when I go to work, right, and I write some software. And there has to be like something that someone has to type in to confirm that they want to perform an action, right? So they've clicked a button and you've got to prompt them to say, "Are you sure?" I don't say, "Are you sure?" I say, "Enter the number 88.
Right.
And people always ask me, why the number 88? And I say, because typing "why" is too easy. You do that automatically. But if I make you type 88, you'll really think about it, right? But the truth is it's the 88 miles per hour from Back to the Future.
Oh, right.
Because when you reach 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious shit.
Right.
That's how much it's in my consciousness.
I've got something at home where the password is, which was done by someone else, is 8888.
Really?
You think they're fans of Back to the Future?
It's
perhaps
more than possible, but it's also, I mean, a repeated number too. So you might just do it. Mm. You know, they might have a thing for infinity on its side. Yeah. So you just don't know. But it is the reason I do it. I only tell the clients I really like, though.
It's related to the security industry, and I think the fellow who runs the company might be Libyan, so that might explain it.
Does he have a blue van, though, and a rocket launcher?
No, I think he's got a yellow van, but all the same.
So here's the thing that speaks to the deliberacy of this movie. Originally, they had a different actor because they tried to get Michael J. Fox, but he was doing Family Ties. And they asked Family Ties, can we get him to come and do the movie for whatever it takes, like a month to shoot or whatever? And they said, no, he's ours. We own him. We've got a contract. You can't have him.
Right.
And so they hired another actor called Eric Stoltz, who you may or may not have seen, but probably not. He's not not that kind of actor that would be, you know, he hasn't even really done that many movies. And they shot, I think it was five days with Eric Stoltz. And when they watched the film back, they realized none of it was working because he couldn't play that cartoon character type zaniness that they wanted.
Yeah.
So they knew they wanted this.
Yeah.
And Eric Stoltz is quite a serious method actor. He's very, he always plays cool characters. Mm. He's quite serious. He doesn't tell jokes. He doesn't smile. And they did all of this production on the film, and then they said, "We can't continue with Eric Stoltz. This isn't going to work," and they fired him. And they reshot. So they went back to Family Ties and said, "Please, can we have Michael J. Fox?"
Oh, right.
And they went, "Well, actually, there's a break in production coming up now, so he's allowed to do it.
Okay,
we can't stop him." Right. So they said, "Right, Michael J. Fox." They put him in. They reshot it at the cost of millions of dollars, right, just to get that tone correct. And somehow they knew, even without the music and all of the effects and everything that they had in the movie, they just knew the acting had to be that tone.
Yeah.
So I'm certain they meant it to be that way, whether it works or not. You know. I don't know. I don't know if it would work on me now if I hadn't seen it when I was a kid. You know, I already love Doc Brown. Like, he's a great character. He's hilarious. Yeah. I like everything he does. I'm giggling just looking at him. And I wouldn't the first time I saw it, you know. Mm. It's only because I've known him for so many years, you know. And I've seen him in the sequels and all that stuff. Yeah. So, I don't know. Let's talk about the score. The score was okay, right? Surely. No.
So it's not a movie that I, to my taste, that I would go and see.
Right.
I think that's that has to be said.
Is that the movie or the score?
That's the movie.
The movie, right.
Oh, are you talking about the music?
No. Oh, sorry. You thought I meant score of the movie.
Yeah.
No, I mean the score as in the music.
No, well, I was going to give the movie 5 out of 10.
5 out of 10? All right. Yeah.
The score, well, the score is made up of a lot of songs I know and a bit of other special effects music, and it's very good.
Yeah. What about that main theme, though? The dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, that's quite good.
Yeah. It should stay in your head at least a little bit, I would imagine.
I mean, that's the first time I've heard the Davy Crockett song since I was, for 60 years.
Yeah. And Mr. Sandman, when he goes back to the 50s, is a good one.
Mr. Sandman goes back away, but the Davy Crockett song was just a show on TV when I was a child.
Yeah. Well, that was from my childhood too, probably because of you, I guess. But
yeah,
I don't remember why, but I wanted a Davy Crockett hat as well, so I suppose that rubbed off on me. I didn't even remember why. I mean, I know there was a TV show.
Well, they were made of real fur, you know. I mean, it wouldn't even be politically correct.
No, you can't do it. You can't have it now. Yeah, you should have got it when you could. You did have one.
I did.
Yeah, you did have one. That's right.
Yeah. So the score is who wrote the score?
Alan Silvestri.
Right. Well, the score's very good.
But he scores all of Robert Zemeckis's films, I think.
But I have to say, overwhelmed by a lot of sheer noise at times. So.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of assault on the ears during that movie, which probably takes away a bit from focusing on the musical side of the score. But I certainly enjoyed, you know, Huey Lewis and the News and the other stuff.
Did you realize Huey Lewis was in it before I told you?
No, I didn't realize he was actually in it.
No, he is.
But I don't know. I mean, I have one of his records at home, but I don't know what he looks like.
I don't think I did either. Yeah.
No, I
don't remember him being in.
Not clearly, anyway.
He was probably in some videos or something that he did, but.
He would have been, but as I say, I haven't got a clear memory of what he looks like.
All right. Well, I mean, I can't ask you the score now because you've already told us it's going to be 5.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking I've got to pass it, but.
Don't have to.
Not much more. Well.
A 5 seems, for what you've said that you feel about it, a 5 seems pretty hard. If it's a movie that you dismiss pretty early on like that as nonsense, I wouldn't give a movie a 5 if I felt that way about it. And there are plenty of movies that I feel that way about.
But I mean, I would dismiss the Three Stooges as nonsense after 1 minute, but I might still walk out and give it a good score.
Why?
It's just a piece of nonsense, but it's funny.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. This wasn't a laugh out loud movie all the way through. There were moments you laughed at.
I wouldn't classify it as a comedy. It's
definitely not.
It's a blockbuster is what it is.
All right.
It's not really considered a genre, but that really is what it is. Yeah. Same with Jurassic Park. It's just a blockbuster. It's not supposed to be anything other than like hold your attention and make you forget about the shit job that you have.
Yeah.
And you know, the asshole who cut you off in traffic and, you know, just stop you from worrying about that stuff for hour and a half, 2 hours. That's all these movies are trying to do, I think.
Yeah.
But I think it's a more cerebral blockbuster than, I don't know, something that's just people shooting each other and, you know, flying around in space and things like that. There's a bit more to it than that.
Yeah.
Maybe not a lot. You know, I don't think it's.
It's not life changing.
No. No, but it I don't know, somehow it's affected a lot of people, you know, for over the last 30 years it's become.
Has it?
Well, I was going to call it a cult film, but only if cult refers to like a large majority of the population, which is the opposite of what it means. So it really is a lot of people, but from a certain era, I guess. I don't know how it is. Maybe you have to see it when you're quite young.
So the way I'm talking about it would annoy a lot of people, would it?
Oh, you won't be popular with quite a large segment. Okay. But luckily, you know, we don't have any listenership yet, so you don't have to worry about that. You can say whatever you want.
No, but you never know.
No, but I think speaking for myself as a fan of the movie, I can accept your opinion.
Because a person who liked that movie is likely to be violent themselves.
Why do you say that? I don't know about that. Maybe they're just interested in science.
Possibly.
But yeah, I mean, the time travel thing never occurred to me to not accept that that was okay. And maybe that is a symptom of being young when you see it. You just sort of accept what you see.
I would accept the spectator version of time travel.
Okay.
Travel easier than that. So I can imagine someone being there but being unable to be seen and seeing what's happening as it happened. Absolutely.
The spectator version doesn't necessarily mean you're invisible. It just means you can't affect the future when you go back in time.
What I'm saying is it would mean I was invisible if it was done my way.
Well, it's not very interesting though, is it?
Well, it depends.
I would suggest not writing that movie unless you could come up with something.
I may sit down and write that movie just to find a way to make it interesting. I haven't thought about it.
It's an interesting exercise. And I've got to say, I've never seen a time travel movie where the time traveler goes invisible. So I've seen movies where people turn invisible. The Invisible Man,
I'm not saying turn invisible. I'm just saying being not visible to the people because you're not actually...
You can't interact.
No.
Yeah. All right, Dad. Well, thanks for giving it a go with me. And maybe next time I'll try and pick one that I think is more that you're the target audience for.
That'd be good.
All right. I'll do that.
With a nice deep message.
All right. Should we call it a day or a night?
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
See ya.